Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 24th, 2019. A South Sudanese actor says refugees contribute to the economy of the United States.
Me, I'm pretty big in this resettlement because the numbers of the refugees is being cut down. When we came here in the 90s, we were the first people that spoke about our own story so that later on, other South Sudanese has to find an opportunity to go to Egypt, to go to Australia.
And South Sudanese returning home from refuge accuse local chiefs of selling their land in Nyeri River State.
I found that the land of mine was sold until I followed up the case and I could not get the right answer. I'm not happy about it. I would urge the government to give the people the plots that were taken back by other people so that it is given back to the owners.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. U.S. President Donald Trump outlined a new migration policy aimed at stopping the flow of illegal immigration and attracting skilled workers to the United States. Trump said, quote, "The annual green card flow is mostly low-waged and low-skilled." But Ger Dwayne, a South Sudanese actor and a UNHCR Goodwill ambassador, disagrees. Dwayne, a former refugee, says, from his experience as a refugee, some of the brightest people who can contribute to a robust economy of the United States come from outside.
Me, I'm pretty big in this resettlement because the numbers of the refugees is being cut down. When we came here in the 90s, we were the first people that spoke about our own story so that later on, other South Sudanese has to find an opportunity to go to Egypt, to go to Australia, leave from Egypt to Australia. And now we have a big community. So these are the things that people don't know. We, the people who come in the 90s, we established those refugee camps in Kenya. And then we spoke about our own stories here. And then our people were brought later on. So when we're talking about the number of the refugees being cut down by a current administration, this is a serious thing. It's a serious thing. And then it's serious in the sense the programs left people on the pipelines before they even bring them here. So now the number is being cut down. In the state of 110,000, the previous administration was speaking about, now is maybe they're going to just approve like 22. So if the 22 people come here, it's just like a few crops of people just spread in the ocean. Even us, when we came here in hundreds of thousands, the numbers, look at how much we got lost. You know, so resettlement is not like, it's not the best, but we should not cut it completely. We can find a way to really improve it.
So so improving it is actually one of the things that President Trump says that he's trying to do. And in a recent address at the White House, he said that the majority of green card holders are low-skilled people who work low-wage jobs. Do you have a reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is that, you know, when you're in a refugee camp, and then some of those people, they really have a skill. Some of them, they even holding PhDs, you know, but because you can hold a PhD and live in a refugee camp for so long, your skill could be depleted at some point, you know. You won't be having those skills anymore. So if we have to improve resettlement, I'm not going to speak on behalf of the current administration because I don't know much about it. So I can only speak on the basis of improving resettlement. So in that sense, those refugees who are there, if we really wanted to incorporate them and become like good refugees, and then we should be creating programs where people are being trained and educated and use the technology, take advantage of it, you know. Put satellites in those areas, you know, create the schools. They can even teach them while the person can be in this room right here and until, you know, you have the skills. If you have to bring a person from that part of the world to here, you bring them in as economic refugees. They, you know, they can do IT work, they can have the skills.
So right now, in this present moment, there's over 67 million refugees and forcibly displaced people around the world. This is the highest number that we've ever seen in history. What is the issue? Why do you think the refugee crisis is at the levels that it is right now globally?
Well, conflicts, conflict of greeds, you know, and the people are not, there's no inclusion to all the government. There's no accountability. There's no governance. So people don't know what the government stands for or what they should be expecting of their government structure.
What's your advice to South Sudanese refugees?
My advice, life begin where they are, you know. Where they are in refugee camps, they should be starting to live their whole lives and really try to look into that little opportunity, where there's a small work, where there's a work where even if it doesn't pay you, you may gain a little skills. At some point, it will be peace in South Sudan where you can go back with some kind of skills, you know, so that you can really, you're not going to be giving the handout. You will be helping your own country.
That was Gerd Dwayne, UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador and a South Sudanese actor from the 2014 film The Good Life. He was speaking to my colleague Ayen Dengbior from Washington. Authorities in Yei River State have ordered traditional chiefs to stop selling plots of land without approval from the local government. The commissioner of Yei River State says internally displaced persons and refugees returning home from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda are discovering that their land has been sold during their absence. Daniel Friday-Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Many people who return from IDP camps around South Sudan or refugee camps from neighboring Uganda or the Democratic Republic of Congo say it has been an uphill battle to reclaim their residential plots that were illegally sold after they fled their hometowns and villages because of fighting. Chaplain Kenyi, a resident of Loparache area, says he is finding it difficult to resettle in Yei River County.
The plot was sold actually when I was in Uganda. I ran for as a RPC. I'm now back to Yei. The condition of living is very hard to me because I don't have money for rent. So I want these problems to be solved by the government of Yei River State such that the land should be regained back.
Victor Bidali, another former IDP who recently returned to Yei Town, says he too lost his plot of land after a local chief sold it to someone else during his absence.
I found that the land of mine was sold until I followed up the case and I could not get the right answer. I'm not happy about it. I would urge the government to give the people the plots that were taken back by other people so that it is given back to the owners.
Kenyi and Bidali are both appealing to local authorities to establish proper land acquisition procedures to prevent tension within Yei River State communities. According to the Land Act of 2009, all land in South Sudan is classified as public, community or private land, and all land is owned by the people of South Sudan and its usage regulated by the government. The Act states that land may be acquired, held and transacted through customary freehold or leasehold tenure systems. Yei River County Commissioner Justin Lokonga says his office has received several cases of suspected illegal land acquisitions and transactions without the legal consent of local government officials. In response, Lokonga issued a local ban on the sale and acquisition of all residential plots without consulting the local government, and he warned that any community leader or local chief allotting or selling land to buyers without permission from local authorities will be prosecuted in court.
It is the government to regulate the issuance of the land, giving of the land, whether being plots or anything for business purpose. Anybody found doing selling, leasing the land without the knowledge of the county authority has to be fined. First of all, a case has to be opened against him, and then if he found doing practice that, has to be in prison for 6 months. It's found that that one is a community leader, sub chief, or anything like that, has to lose the position also of being leader of that particular community.
Lokonga says he has ordered police officers and other government authorities to enforce the directive and urged returning refugees and IDPs to file official complaints if their land has been sold.
Anybody whose land has been sold or somebody took it has to report it immediately to the authorities so that measures is taken against that person who sell or who confiscate or who denied to give to surrender the land or the house to the rightful owner. Legal advisor, inspector of police, and then the security apparatus in the county has to enforce that order.
Taban Oliver, a legal aid officer with the South Sudan Law Society, says the problem is many citizens do not know the correct procedure to follow for acquiring land from either the community or the government.
You, as a person who wants to acquire land or wants to buy land, you first have to go to the ministry with the papers belonging to the land in which you want to inquire. Then check out in the ministry who is the exact owner of the land. There's what we call the sale purpose certificate, which is supposed to be acquired from the court. Then the next step is you can now look into a legal personnel. In the agreement, it is usually that both parties have the consent with at least witnesses who should be of a sound knowledge regarding the land in question.
Oliver is calling on Yei River state officials to set up a legal land registry and form clear land management policies to prevent land disputes from occurring in the future. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
From Yei, we move to the Upper Nile. Participants attending a two-day national dialogue conference for the Greater Upper Nile are calling on officials in South Sudan to address land disputes in Upper Nile. The delegates say many internally displaced persons are returning to villages to find their homes occupied by other families. ONN Walter Solomon has this report for VOA from Juba.
Participant Rachel Nyadakpol, who is originally from the Upper Nile region and now resides in Juba, is a former presidential advisor on gender and human rights. Nyadak says a lack of guiding principles on border demarcation when the Kiir administration created new states and counties resulted in multiple land and border disputes among the communities in the Upper Nile.
Creation and formation of a state was based on tribal boundaries rather than geographical basis. Establishment of the counties caused problems. Land border issues, annexation. An example was Gye from Central Equatoria or Eastern Equatoria been annexed to Buma State. And then Kilo Asharab and Patuat. Change of names of some areas into other tribal languages. Displacement due to war led to subsequent occupation of other communities' land.
Bishop Paul Chol of Melut Diocese of Episcopal Church of South Sudan says some of the land and border disputes started long before South Sudan declared its independence.
Truly, there are some villages which were occupied because of the war which was between North and South. And then those tribes which were instigated against the other tribe, they came and occupied the places and then they give their name, leaving the real name, which is the original name, and then they translated to their own.
Nyadak is calling on the government to act quickly on the participants' recommendations, like setting up a verification committee and establishing borders based on geographical boundaries. She says that will go a long way toward resolving land and border disputes while encouraging IDPs sheltering in UN-run camps across the country to voluntarily return to their villages.
Formation of independent land dispute and verification committee to consult with the communities. Formation of a state and counties shall be based on geographical boundaries. Land border demarcation shall be based on the British colonial map adopted on 1st January 1956. The government to enhance security to people in Upper Nile. Those who occupied private houses of people in Greater Upper Nile should vacate.
Bishop Chol says he believes government soldiers who have occupied other communities' land will evacuate if national government officials order them to do so.
A town like Malakal, it is the army who is occupying these houses. So this question of these occupied is just a temporary because there are houses there. You know, during this 13 incident, most of the newest houses were occupied. But later on, the government announced that all those houses which were occupied by non-owners, they evacuated. This is a good example here in Juba. If it is Malakal also, that thing will happen.
Francis Deng, spokesman of the Committee for National Dialogue, Healing, Peace and Reconciliation, says the fact that up to 500 people from the Upper Nile region have come together to talk candidly about their problems shows they are willing to compromise, but they also want the government to address the issues directly. He says if that happens, South Sudanese will return home.
Return has to be voluntary, in safety and dignity. And this is subjective. If people are afraid, they will not go. But if they see evidence that peace is coming, security is restored to their areas, they will go voluntarily. But they need to be supported. They need to be well informed. They need to know whether security has come to their areas or not. And when they get there, they need the support to start their life.
Deng says the recommendations will be submitted to the revitalized government of national unity, which is expected to be formed at the end of November after the pre-transitional period expires. He is calling on all South Sudanese to support the ongoing national dialogue aimed at restoring peace and reconciling communities torn apart by the 5.5-year conflict. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more young South Sudanese women are enrolling in adult education classes. We will tell you where that is happening right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you think is most important to live a good life?
You need to work hard, yeah, because, you know, when God helps, you also have to do your part and work hard. And also friends are a big thing in your life as it goes on. So friends who are loyal, God, and hard work bring out the best in a person.
Stay happily. You don't have any regrets. You live in every moment you live.
To live a good life, one, you must be simple and humble, okay? Two, you must be honest so that people can love you.
Good life I am seeing is having a free life, a life without enemies. Secondly, a simple life, a life not life of bragging, a life of saying I am this and this, no. Lastly, life of holiness also.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Officials at the Ministry of Education in Wau State says girls who dropped out of school due to early marriages or other reasons are enrolling in adult learning programs. The Director of Alternative Education System at the Ministry says adult learners have been performing well in national exams. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau.
More than 50 level 1 learners dressed in either black skirts or black trousers and orange tops participated in a science lesson at Waonar Accelerated Learning Program or ALP Center. 26-year-old Maria Amer, a mother of two, is enrolled in level 4 at Waonar ALP Center. Amer says she dropped out from primary 5 from the neighboring Tongji State after her parents forcefully married her off 10 years ago. Amer says her 51-year-old husband, who she says lives in the United States, opposes her decision to return to school even though she has not seen him in 2 years.
He told me that to be educated, I don't want. So I've just already married you with cows. Instead of taking you back, that one would never happen. So he doesn't want me at all to go anywhere outside of where he doesn't. That he's going to lose his property, which is me. So I don't know.
Amer, whose husband paid 180 cows to her parents for bride price, says many men in her community believe educated girls are likely to abandon their husbands and get married to other men even though their first husbands have paid a significant dowry for them. She says she has tried without success to convince her husband to allow her to study in adult classes. But Amer says she is not giving up. She says she wants to become a lawyer so she can become a human rights defender, especially for young girls. 43-year-old Atima Romano Danga works at the National Electricity Corporation in Wau as a messenger. She is enrolled in Level 2 at Bright Stars ALP Center and heads the Women Association in Wau's High Jebel neighborhood. Speaking in Arabic, Danga says she has found it difficult to handle paperwork in the office because of her lack of education.
Now I'm able to write my name during exams in English, and if there are events or workshop, I can clearly write my name together with others. Before, I used to ask any person next to me to write my name, but I took a decision to come back to school.
Officials here say the education ministry, with support from some NGOs in the area, has increased the number of evening classes to encourage school dropouts to attend adult classes and continue their education. John Diu, who runs Waunar ALP Center, says the number of adult learners enrolled at the center increased from 622 last year to 766 this year. And he says there are more females enrolled this year compared to last year. Diu says, after what they have been through, it is hard for many other learners to concentrate on their classes.
At first, when they get enrolled, like when they come for the first year in level one, this is where we have to work hard, because they come while they are traumatized, they don't do well. But at the end, as you continue with them, when they reach to the second year, which is level two, then they change the performance.
Mario Alex Ali, the director for alternative education system in Wau's education ministry, says more than 500 out of the 707 candidates who sat for the 2018 primary leaving examination passed successfully. He says young female school dropouts are especially enthusiastic about attending adult classes this academic year. He says some of the ALP centers are even doing better than regular schools.
Wau A Girls Center, they brought almost 78% of passing mark last year. This was a very good center comparing to some of the centers, comparing even to some of the primary schools. This was a very good sign for us in the ministry.
Ali says there are 38 ALP centers in Wau Municipality, 27 in former Ju River County, and 25 in former Wau County. Despite their progress, Ali says, 9 out of 27 ALP centers in the greater Ju River County were closed in the recent weeks due to communal fighting in the area. Ali is encouraging more young women to enroll in Wau State Accelerated Learning Program. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
From Wau, we take you to Kampala, where a high court judge in Kampala blocked a decision by the Uganda Communication Commission to suspend 39 journalists from 13 media houses for the coverage of the arrest of musician-turned-lawmaker Bobi Wine. Sampala Robert, executive director of the Human Rights Network for Journalists in Uganda, tells VOA's James Batty he hopes the ruling against the Uganda Communication Commission serves as a wake-up call to officials censoring the media.
This is a right step in the right direction, because issuing an injunction pending hearing of the main application is a relief to us as the media fraternity in Uganda, because we now know that UCC cannot go ahead to implement its arbitrary directive to media houses by forcing them to lay off their topmost management staff members to a tune of 39 within 13 media houses. So with this, however long it takes in court, we know that UCC will not be able to violate this particular court order, because the law talks of regulating the media, not controlling and stifling press freedom as it is now. And so this comes as a very big relief to us as media rights activists in this country.
Does this mean now that these journalists that had been suspended, according to the Uganda Communication Commission, does this mean that they will continue on the job until the case is heard?
Yeah, this certainly means that now the status quo will be maintained. What had happened recently when the National Association of Broadcasters, a body that brings together owners of media houses in Uganda, met with the UCC, the communications regulator, it was agreed that the 39 be suspended for 1 month pending investigations into their conduct. But certainly now with a court injunction setting away the orders, it certainly means that they all will be reinstated and continue doing their work until court determines the main application, which is to quash the directives that were issued by UCC. Because by all normal standards, we think that UCC is outside of this mandate and that it is acting in total disregard of the due process of the law.
You know, the judge made an interesting observation in the ruling, saying to the Uganda Communication Commission, and the judge wondered why a case of possible incitement of violence was reported to the Uganda Communication Commission instead of to the police.
This is a very big observation that the court has made. UCC is not one of the security management bodies in our country. UCC is supposed to act and work with the media and supposed to see the media freedom flourish. So this observation certainly means that UCC is embarking on the mandate that it is not within its parameters. And we hope that from the onset now, UCC will appreciate the fact that it is abusing office, is using powers that are not vested in its office, and that it is acting outside of the law. We really hope that UCC will wake up to the reality that it must not work against the media. It must work with the media for the media to grow.
That's Sampala Robert, Executive Director of Human Rights Network for Journalists in Uganda, speaking with my colleague James Batty. That brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Control by Fally Ipupa.
Contrôle.
Aigle, aigle, à l'écoute. Reçu.
En avant, en avant, en avant, en avant, en avant, en avant, en avant. On regarde pas à gauche, à droite, mais on avance. Non, non, on ne recule pas, mais on avance. On avance, on avance, on avance, on avance. On avance, on les gère, bien on les gère. Oui, on les gère. On les traumatise, oui, on les sait. Bah ouais. La jalousie est un vilain défaut. Bah ouais. Ou bien, que il faut à la zoba. Que il faut à la zabri. Mais vraiment, vraiment, il faut à la zoba. À la zabri. Ah, ah. Clé à la main, on active nos armures. Ah. Au son guerrier, on intègre au contrôle.
Ah, ah, ah. Nous sommes les élus de Dieu.
On est ça, les gens.
Et quoi?
Quand tu es bon, tu es bon, ma nègre.
Quand tu es nul, tu es nul.
Nous sommes les élus de Dieu.
On est ça, les gens.
Contrôle.
Quand tu es bon, tu es bon, ma nègre.
We've been listening to Fally Ipupa performing his latest hit song, Control. I guess it's Friday and some of you are in a dancing mood. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Have a safe weekend, and we hope you can join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.